Hello, and thanks for joining us for this latest episode of Education in Focus South Asia, a series of podcasts focusing on areas of debate in education in the South Asia region, brought to you by the British Council. My name's Rob Lewis, and later on, you'll be hearing my co-presenter, Simon Borg. One of the recurring themes of this series is the role of teachers. It seems that, whatever the focus of the episode, we come back to them because, of course, they are the key agents in any education system, and they need support to help that system realise its ambitions. Now, normally, Simon Borg conducts interviews for us on this podcast, but in this episode, it's going to be a little bit different. I'll be interviewing Simon on this episode's theme, In Service, Teacher Development, as this is an area in which he has extensive experience. Before speaking to Simon, though, to get a better idea of what teacher development looks like in the region, I spoke to Rahat Rizwan. Rahat is an education specialist with experience of working on and leading CPD programs in Pakistan. Rahat started by giving a bit of background on in-service teacher training in Pakistan.
In Pakistan, in-service training is also offered as standalone trainings, mostly in summer holidays. There are specific training institutes at the professional and district levels. They're called cluster centers to perform the task. And cascade model of training is used across the country. Now, it is important for teachers to be exposed to other modes of trainings rather than face-to-face training. Most of the times, they have only experience of face-to-face training. And that is what they are used to. And there is a need for continuous professional development because the teachers face a lot of difficulty in teaching their classes. Over the years, the neglect of government schools and quality of education, the result of that is that the teachers have two key needs. One is of pedagogical skills. They need to know how to teach and how to teach large classes, how to teach multi-grade classes, different age groups. And also, they lack the capacity to teach the content they are responsible for teaching. So many teachers can't even solve a 2 or 3 digit division sum in mathematics, cannot read English sentences, or cannot write English sentences. So language proficiency is a problem. So therefore, these two aspects have to be focused upon through training.
It's a difficult environment in Pakistan, clearly, but can you share a success story which shows what can be done to overcome the kind of barriers you've just mentioned?
When I was working as Director of Academics and Training, I was responsible for professional development of around 3,000 teachers. And these are the key barriers that we identified for those teachers and thought that, you know, we should address them. So basically, what we had to do was to teach the books or the syllabus and the content that they were supposed to teach, and allow them to use the pedagogy that we taught during the trainings. And then, of course, we followed up the trainings and we followed up with the teachers and provided help in their classrooms and supported them in using the materials and the strategies that were taught in during the training. And we noticed by conducting student assessments on a regular basis that the reading skills of the teachers as well as the students improved, and also the time management and classroom management of teachers improved. So the lessons were not delayed or they were not postponed due to ill preparedness of teachers, or, you know, the teachers were more prepared for their lessons and they knew what they were teaching. So any questions that students asked were answered. We encouraged teachers to tell the students that if they don't know something, they will go back, check, and then answer their questions. So the reservation or the, you know, the fear of not knowing among the teachers lessened quite a great deal, and they were okay with not knowing and okay to go back, learn, and then come to the class prepared to answer the questions. And if they needed help, they would just say it. You know, this is a big achievement.
That's interesting. It's a really important development, isn't it? A big achievement in your context in Pakistan, and it must be very satisfying too to see that change having that kind of positive effect.
The trainings had a positive effect on teachers' learning habits and students' learning outcomes, and that is exactly what CPD should focus on, and that is the result that we want to see, that teachers, if they teach better, they communicate better, they communicate confidently, and it should show in their learners' learning capacity or, you know, basically learning outcomes.
What struck me from Rahat's comments were, first of all, her description of typical teacher training interventions, and also at the end there, that positive example of impact that she described. Now, to look at these themes of teacher training and impact in more detail, and also to consider more widely the issue of teacher professional development, I spent some time speaking to Simon. I started by asking him why teacher development is so important in effective education systems.
Yes, that's a good starting point, I think. One obvious reason is because the quality of teachers has a major impact on the quality of education that students experience. So a very, very important reason for investing in the professional development of teachers is because that leads to improvements in teacher competence, which will in turn, we hope, lead to improvements in the student experience. And that means not just student outcomes in terms of achievement, but in terms of student outcomes more generally, their motivation to learn, their willingness to learn, their attitudes to learning. Professional development also has other benefits. It can boost teacher motivation, it can boost teacher confidence, it can boost teacher collegiality, by which we mean it gives teachers opportunities to work more closely with their colleagues. And clearly, in the context of educational reform, where, for example, teaching methods are being changed, curricula are being changed, assessment systems are being changed, professional development has a very important role to play in preparing teachers for those changes.
I suppose sometimes there's a close association between teacher development and this idea of improving teachers' subject or content knowledge. And as we heard from Rahat earlier, pedagogical knowledge too. There's perhaps more to it than that though, isn't there?
Yes, it's broader. Professional development is more than improving knowledge. You know, there is knowledge, which is critical for teacher competence. And as you said, there is pedagogical knowledge, which is knowledge of teaching. There's content knowledge, which is knowing your subject, whatever it is. They are both important in teacher competence. But there's more to being an effective teacher than knowledge and skills. As we said, there's the ability to work effectively with others, collaboratively and collegially. There's the confidence that we've mentioned. So being confident is an important part of being an effective teacher, because when teachers are confident, they're more willing to try out innovations. There's teacher motivation, as we said, which is also important as well. So you're absolutely right in saying that professional development is more than simply acquiring new knowledge and new skills.
Okay, Simon, moving on to the next question, the organisation of teacher development. When I spoke to Rahat, she talked about the fact that face-to-face training is still the dominant form in her experience in Pakistan, but there are presumably many ways of working.
Definitely, and this is a very important issue for policymakers to be aware of when they're thinking about teacher development policy in their context. There is, as you said, a tradition in many contexts, including many in South Asia, a tradition of face-to-face training workshops as the main way in which professional development takes place. And within that model, teachers will attend seminars or workshops, you know, maybe once a year, maybe twice a year. The workshops might last anything from a few hours to a few days, but that's it basically. There's no other component. That's still dominant, I think, globally, but there are alternatives to this model. There are alternatives, for example, which emphasize development taking place in schools rather than development taking place in workshops. And so we have school-based models of professional development, which are increasingly evident, and for which there is a lot of evidence about the value of these, because when teachers are learning in the context of their schools and their classrooms, the professional development is a lot more situated, which means it's more directly connected to their daily work as teachers, and therefore has more immediate relevance.
So could you give us an example of in-school professional development, what it might look like, how it might work?
Yes, there are many different models for school-based professional development. One might be peer observation, for example, which is where colleagues, that's what we mean by peers, observe one another's lesson. So as a teacher, I might come to visit your lesson, you're my colleague, we have agreed in advance particular issues you want me to look at. I'll come and see your lesson. Afterwards, we'll sit down and we'll have a constructive discussion about the particular issues in the lesson we had agreed to focus on. And that leads to maybe defining some action for you to work on as part of your development. And then you will reciprocate by coming to my classroom and doing the same thing. And by doing that over time, we work in a school-based context, we work collegially, we work constructively to support our own development. So that's one common model, I guess, of school-based professional development. There are others such as mentoring, there are reflection groups where teachers meet in small groups to talk about their teaching and reflect on challenges and discuss solutions. There are models such as action research, where again teachers are involved in investigating in a relatively systematic way particular changes they want to make to their work and the effect of their changes. What all of these have in common is they take place within schools rather than requiring teachers to leave the school and attend workshops delivered by external trainers. And we're not saying, of course, that these kinds of external workshops have no value. They clearly do, but they have most value, I think, when they are linked more closely to what teachers are doing in their classrooms.
Okay, so your feeling is that there's probably more value within school approaches, that school-based models are effective. Is there any evidence that backs up the use of these approaches?
I think there is a lot of evidence, yes. On projects or initiatives to professional development where teachers are given the chance to work together over time in schools and to focus on practical issues that are relevant to teachers and students, there is clear evidence that teachers get more out of that experience and that what they learn feeds back more directly into their teaching. This is because the work is that the focus of the work is being defined very often by teachers themselves. It is the teachers who can identify what it is they need to focus on. It is the teachers who can see what additional support perhaps their learners need. And although external support and advice can be very valuable, it is the teachers who are largely in charge of the process. When this happens over time in a collaborative manner, there's evidence that it contributes not only to the individual teacher's growth, but more collectively to the growth of staff, and even beyond that, to the development of schools more broadly. So there's a lot of positive evidence of that kind.
Now, based on your experience, again, could you just share some other factors that you feel influence how successful teacher development programs can be?
Definitely. I think we've already alluded to a few. I mean, one is making it practical and situated, in other words, linked to what teachers do on a daily basis. Teachers very often complain about professional development as being disconnected from what they do in the classroom or detached from the practicalities which they need to address. So making professional development more practical, more connected to what teachers do in the classroom is one clear way of increasing its relevance to teachers and therefore its effectiveness. We've also mentioned the issue of time. Professional development is most effective when it takes place over time. So the 1 hour workshop may create awareness of a new issue, may provide some new knowledge about an issue, but it's unlikely to lead to longer term sustained changes in what teachers do. Another factor I think that is critical in supporting teacher professional development is support within schools. Teachers very often are frustrated because they attend professional development, they go back to schools with enthusiasm and new ideas they want to try out, but they do not find support within the school that allows them to experiment with these new ideas. And of course, that very quickly means that their motivation to change is lowered and very little happens in terms of change. Teacher motivation is another factor. I think it's really important. If teachers are going to change, they need to be willing to change. So ways of creating teacher motivation are central to making professional development more effective as well. So those are four factors, I think, which collectively can make a big difference to how effective professional development is.
Thinking in terms of outcomes, Rahat mentioned one of the things she noticed in the successful example she spoke about was that teachers became less afraid of admitting what they didn't know. Now, I imagine this is the kind of change you're looking for with these kinds of programs, isn't it?
Absolutely. Changing teachers' attitudes is another key goal, I guess, of professional development. As we said earlier, it's not just about giving them knowledge and skills, but also making them more open-minded to change. Changing their maybe attitudes towards themselves. Teachers are very often concerned that they must know all the answers, that it's unacceptable for them to be uncertain about what to do or what to say. So another I think positive goal of professional development is to help teachers be more open to the fact that it's not always possible to know all the answers, that it's okay to say, I'm not really sure, I can go and look this up, you know, to be less afraid about not being this all-knowing authoritative figure in the eyes of students. And that for many teachers is quite a challenge to change the way they see themselves. Yes.
Simon, I know you've got experience of working in South Asia, so could you just relate that experience to what we've been speaking about? In other words, effective approaches and positive results that you've seen actually in the region.
Definitely, yes, from South Asia, and I think more generally as well, because what we learn from projects elsewhere is also instructive. But in South Asia, for example, we've had a mentoring project which I've worked on. So mentoring is an example of school-based professional development. Mentoring is an approach where a teacher receives guidance from a more experienced or more knowledgeable colleague who visits their classroom periodically a number of times over a year and sees the teacher at work, has discussions with the teacher about their teaching, helps the teacher understand what maybe areas of their teaching they can develop further. It's not the same as peer observation because the mentor is seen to be someone more knowledgeable perhaps or more expert, but the relationship is still meant to be a collegial and constructive one. So that was one project in India called the ELIS project, which I worked on and I think which illustrated quite well some of these principles about school-based professional development, about extended professional development, because the mentoring project went on over 2 years. Outside South Asia, one project I'm working on in Azerbaijan, for example, also illustrates some of these principles. There is a methodology component. As we said earlier, pedagogical skills are important for teachers. But there's also a language development component running in parallel so that teachers can improve their own English language skills, which is also critical to their work. The project unfolds over time, so it takes place over a whole school year with teachers meeting and working with their trainers every week over that period. Another feature of that project is that to avoid too much methodological input, and this is sometimes a problem on programs where teachers get lots of hours of input in a short time. As we said, it's spread over time, but additionally, they receive input once every 2 weeks. And in the intervening week, we have what we call a reflective session, where teachers have the opportunity to talk about what they've done in their classroom in the meantime. So get some input, take it back to the classroom, try out something, come back the following week and share with colleagues your experience before receiving more input in the subsequent section. And I think that's quite a nice model as well because it gives teachers space to reflect, not to be overwhelmed by too much input. And as we said, they can develop both their pedagogical skills and their language skills at the same time.
We've heard lots of examples of how teacher development can be organised about different approaches, but when it comes to its impact, How can you actually be sure it's working? How do you measure just how effective it is? This is a really vital area, isn't it?
It really is a critical issue and really, really important for us to be able to say, look, we've invested a significant amount of resource, time, money, materials in a project. What difference to anyone at any point in time, in any way, has this project made? It's really important to be able to answer that question. And I think we can highlight a number of principles, I think, for policymakers to keep in mind if they want to engage in systematic evaluations of professional development. One is that they need to be very clear about what the objectives of the intervention are. So what are the objectives of the professional development initiative? Unless we're clear about the objectives, it's very difficult to have a basis against which to evaluate success. It's also important to evaluate projects at different points in time. Very often we evaluate just at the end, but that's not enough really to show whether there's been change. Ideally, we've got baselines, we've got exit measures, and if the project is long enough, we've got measures in between as well. And that allows us to see in a longitudinal way whether changes are taking place in relation to previously defined objectives. We need to use multiple sources of data. Again, traditionally people hand out questionnaires perhaps at the end, but there are a wide range of quantitative and qualitative ways of collecting evaluation data and professional development. And then it's important, of course, that the way the data is collected, the tools, the analysis is all done in a rigorous way, and that will give us confidence in the findings. Finally, it's important to say that how we approach the evaluation of professional development needs to be feasible in the context of the project or of the initiative. Feasible means there's no point in having a very complex evaluation framework if the resources, the expertise, the time to implement it don't exist. So, you know, as with most things in life, evaluation is going to be a compromise between what is ideal in theory and what's feasible given the context and the resources. But this is clearly a very, very important issue, and one we should emphasize as an important one for policymakers to keep in mind.
Thanks. Now, to finish off our chat today, I'd just like to ask you to summarise what we've been talking about, something for listeners to take away as the key points related to this theme.
Yeah, I think there are a number of important key points I think we could review briefly for policymakers interested in improving the approach to professional development in their educational systems. One is to remember that professional development has several important functions in a healthy educational system. It's not just about fixing problems, though. That is one of its functions. But we don't only need professional development when there are problems. Even the best teachers can still get better at what they do. So professional development has many important functions, improving quality and ultimately student outcomes is perhaps the most important. The second point is that there's a huge variety of options available when it comes to organizing professional development. As we said, face-to-face training, workshops still predominate in many contexts, but there are a wide range of options available. And it's important for policymakers to be aware of those so they can make informed choices from among them. Thirdly, there is general consensus, I think, now in the international literature around some of the key factors that enhance the effectiveness of professional development. We've talked about making sure it takes place over time, for example, making sure it's relevant to teachers, making sure it's situated, making sure it's practical, for example. There is consensus around the importance of these factors. Appropriateness is always going to be a key factor as well, though, ensuring that the particular approach taken to professional development is appropriate in any particular context. And finally, I think the last point we made was about the importance of evaluation. We invest, or systems invest, a lot of time, money, and other resources in professional development. Therefore, it's perfectly reasonable to expect the evaluation of projects to be done properly so we can see whether they're actually making a difference. In other words, whether the investment has been worthwhile. So effective systems for evaluating the impact of professional development are another key issue for policymakers to keep in mind.
That was Simon Borg speaking to me there. There are several points to pick up on from what we've heard from Simon and Rahat in this episode. Rahat's experience in Pakistan suggests that there are certain patterns to in-service teacher training. It's often at certain times of the year, in summer, a standalone training and usually face-to-face. In terms of what it covers, Rahat mentioned that teachers' needs for support don't just relate to knowledge of their subject. She said that they also need strategies for a range of situations in the classroom, such as teaching mixed abilities or different age groups or large classes. So what is the most effective way to support teachers with these kinds of needs? Rahat gave an example from her own experience, training which involved follow-up with teachers and a clear link to their work in the classroom. We heard from Simon that there's generally now a consensus on what makes professional development activities effective, such as making those activities more practical or delivering them over a period of time rather than as a one-off event. And there are plenty of studies and reviews to refer to on this. Walter and Briggs' review, for example, identified 7 features of successful professional development. These include the example areas that Simon mentioned, as well as the importance of involving teachers in the selection of areas to develop and which activities to do. Walter and Briggs also highlighted the chance for teachers to work together with each other, opportunities for mentoring and coaching, and support from school leadership. So there is a lot to keep in mind. Approaching professional development in this way requires quite a change from traditional approaches, giving teachers the chance to be involved in deciding which areas they develop in, for example, or regular scheduling of CPD over a long period of time. This is quite different to the model of one-off workshops that still exists widely in the region today. And it's worth highlighting one of Simon's final points, I think, the importance of evaluation. You need to know when you take these approaches that they work in terms of student learning outcomes and the teachers themselves. As with any area in this series, understanding the research findings can really help those involved in the design of in-service professional development. So if you're interested in the review I mentioned, as well as further, more practical guides, you can find links to them on the same page as this recording. And remember, if you'd like to comment on what you've heard in this episode, we would be delighted to hear your thoughts. You can share them with us on Facebook or Twitter using the hashtag EducationSouthAsia. That's hashtag EducationSouthAsia. And finally, don't forget that there are plenty of other episodes to look out for in the series too, from English medium instruction to improving learning outcomes. You can find out more about them by following the links on this page. Thanks for listening to this episode of Education in Focus South Asia. From Simon and me, goodbye.